this is Robin again, calling back to talk about, give a couple of websites for people. This has to do with, I think, something really, a huge scandal that's being covered up by the war, is that it's kind of a reprise of the savings and loan scandal, which was covered up by the Central American wars. You know, there's this great diversion. Look at this, look at this, look at this. Well, the Federal Treasury is being completely ripped off. And one person who has direct knowledge of this is Catherine Austin Fitz, who has a wonderful website called Solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I.com. She was actually Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under Bush 1. She went in to clean up the BCCI scandal and the savings and loan scandal and found out that HUD is essentially being run as a criminal enterprise. There's $59 billion missing from their budget for some year. This is our tax dollars missing, completely gone. This is not ill-appropriated, misspent, mismanaged. This is money that's gone. And there's also billions missing from the federal budget. According to her, and she is a top economist, a recovering Republican, a brilliant woman who I was really fortunate to attend a workshop and a lecture with her. She also has some solutions at her website, which is very interesting, too, of how to create grassroots economies that can essentially cut out a lot of the criminal elements of our economic system that's like draining the public treasury and kind of floating on drug money. So, I mean, there's very complicated issues involved. Are you still there?
I am.
And it sounds, you know, people can go, oh, conspiracy theorists, but the numbers are there. 85% of the government departments, like Department of Energy, Department of Defense, are not in compliance with their own federal law that they're supposed to hand a statement in every year saying, this is where your money went and this is what we spent it on. We'll have to do that as taxpayers every year. 85% of them are not in compliance, and billions of dollars are missing.
Well, maybe if this vigil starts outside the IRS office on Water Street, someone could be distributing literature about this issue, too. And again, the website is... Hello?
Let me know where the vigil is again, because that was actually...
Okay, there is no vigil at the moment, because nobody has really wanted to do it. And but if people are interested, and there are other actions happening at the same time, I'd like to point out, it's not that all the anti-war activists have evaporated and gone underground or gone home or become big patriotic, pseudo-patriotic supporters. It's that there are other actions, like there's a Lockheed action being planned, and if somebody wants to call in and report on that, they're welcome to.
Yeah, no, I think we should applaud the fact that there's so many strategies, there's so many issues to address, and a lot of us feel like, sure, we'll stand out on the street with a sign sometimes, but there's other places to put our energy, too.
Sure.
And I kind of suggest this one, the Solari... .com, and another very interesting one, I think.
And what is that again? Give that to me again.
It's Solari.com, and that is Catherine Austin Fitz's website, which she's suggesting that we start community equity pools to save people's pension funds before, you know, they pump and dump more stocks and steal it all. There's massive fraud going on at the top.
Robin,
and people's
plans?
Money is evaporating.
The, major,
the people's money, our money, is
the major
evaporating.
The fund drain right now is the war, however. And
actually not. Well, that's part of it, and that's part of the strategy. But
well,
when you know that DynCorp is doing the books and is just looting the treasury,
right, but
this
the
is also
money
something that is like a diversionary tactic.
Caller, the amount of money that's being spent on the war every day, I think, dwarfs that at the moment. I could be wrong, but I think that's the case. For me, the priority right now is to stop the war. And it's not either or, of course. I think we should know about these issues, but that's what I'm kind of focusing on.
Right, and I think they're really connected in that if you completely drain public funds, you destabilize and weaken this country to such an extent that, I mean, we have a very fragile democracy at this point, and people need to see that,
I don't
too.
Think we have a democracy.
If the democracy is functioning in some small way, it's very fragile, and it's getting looted, you know. So, I mean, I think that that's also an issue that Democrats and Republicans and people, conservatives and liberals, can come together on and say, hey, we want accountability and transparency. This is our tax money, and you can't just steal it. And you can't just run an unpopular war on it.
I appreciate that, caller. And again, if people want more information, do you want to give a phone number, or do you just want that website given?
You know, there's a group of us trying to start a Solari, but I'd suggest there's really a lot of background and that people check out that website and keep your eye out for...
And the website is?
It's Solari.com, Solari.com.
Hey, thank
you. And
my
name's Robin, and I'm starting up a local group, and you'll probably hear as it goes along.
Okay.
And thanks, Robert, for what you do.
Hey, thank you,
I appreciate it.
Keep it up.
Bye-bye.
And 427-3772 is the number to call to catch our cool radio show and to put your hot voice on the air. 427-3772. Last bit of music was, of course, taped from California from Phil Oakes, 60s fame. Still lives on as far as I'm concerned. Let's see here. Why don't we turn to this? A recent arrest this week, which I mentioned on my Thursday show. The show also airs 6 to 8 in the evening on Thursdays. Bathrop's Piers Broadsides is what we're called. I'm Robert Norris, and in the studio with me is...
Walter Millison.
So, I'm not alone here, so just don't try to mess with me. I got protection, or probably you. I'm not sure if either of us have protection. Maybe we both get in each other's way. You never can tell. I talked about Jason Pascal, a man currently being held in the county jail on a warrant. And you say, well, what's this? You know, you're on a warrant, you're on a warrant. The police have to arrest you if there's a warrant. Nee, nee, nee. What's the problem? Well, the problem with this warrant is that Sergeant Butchie Baker seems to have been targeting an African-American tarot reader or spiritual reader downtown. You may have seen him. He's near the Cooper House, or was, until he was snatched away twice in 48 hours by Sergeant Butchie Baker's troops. Sergeant Baker is the sergeant on the mall who's soft on motorcyclists but harsh on peace activists, bicyclists biking the wrong way, and chalkers on the sidewalk, not to mention sleepers and other major criminals, sitters, political tailors that he's not in agreement with, or that his police are not in agreement with. All of this, of course, backed up by city manager Dick Wilson, police chief Steve Belcher, and the Santa Cruz City Council, nominally under the chair of Mayor Emily Riley. So Jason's in jail, and what happened was, I think I've mentioned it kind of earlier in the show, he's a guy who reads cards. You've seen him on the mall. He's got quite a gift of gab. Some might call him a hustler. But in many ways, he's a part of the color downtown, no pun intended, although he is African-American. And some suggest that's one of the reasons he's being targeted, that he is one of them uppity niggers, you know, that is downtown on the mall. And he's not only got the effrontery to be that, he's got the effrontery to be a homeless person, and he's also got the effrontery to keep coming back, even when they attempt to tell him, don't do this, get away, we don't want you publicly here anymore, because Candy Jackson doesn't like you here. Candy Jackson is one of the managers. I don't know if she's a co-owner. She's the daughter of the owner of Jackson's Shoes that gave us the petition that presented these ordinances that don't allow 73-year-old men with signs to sit down on the mall. Thank you, Candy. So she also came upon Jason Pascal reading the cards to the man, and then afterward asking for a donation, and he got a donation. And Candy immediately filed a complaint for, quote, panhandling, because, you see, he asked for a donation within 3 feet of the man, and that, under the Kennedy-Rotkin anti-panhandling law, they call that aggressive panhandling, see? Got that aggressive panhandling, is illegal to ask for money within 3 feet of a person, even in a completely voluntary transaction. I heard of a man who asked a friend to borrow 29 cents, and he was given a panhandling ticket. Why is this given to some and not to others? Has to do with their appearance. Has to do whether the police don't want them there. It's a blank check to get rid of people police don't want downtown. City Council won't admit this. The more fashionable street musicians don't want to acknowledge this. They're the ones who initially raised the cry, the street performers, against this crazy move-along law. And the other, you can't play music within 10 feet of a building with a display device stuff that came back to City Council and was rubber-stamped and passed by the Riley City Council. In fact, it was expanded from 6 feet to 10 feet. Some would say contracted from 14 feet back to 10 feet, but in fact, it was the amount of forbidden space downtown for people who are musicians with display devices or political tablers has become about 75 to 80% of the sidewalks downtown are now out of bounds, probably more if you consider other obstructions like bicycle racks. And sidewalks that are not downtown but in business districts are almost impossible to legally set up a table on, even for registering voters, because you cannot be within 10 feet of any building, which takes care of almost every part of the sidewalk up and down Soquel Avenue, up and down Mission Street. It's a way of eliminating free speech and First Amendment activities on the sidewalks in much of Santa Cruz business districts. You might want to talk to Scott. I'm for the Palestinian rights Kennedy on that issue, and I, too, am for the Palestinian rights, mind you, as well as the rights of every other oppressed people. But he and these other council members forget the rights of local people because they're poor and because they're not considered really part of their constituency. I understand Scott Kennedy was one of the people that was called by a homeless person who lives in his vehicle, had a huge concrete stone thrown through his window, as well as a couple of other homeless people and vehicles on the west side that has happened to. Haven't heard any public statements from Kennedy denouncing that kind of behavior. Come on, Scott, get off your butt and do something about that. Wouldn't that be nice? That's our vice mayor, Scott Kennedy. Similarly, Mike Rotkin in 1996, when people were leaving threatening notes to homeless people on vehicles on the west side, had nothing to say about that. You can talk to Mike directly yourself. He's going to be on this show in a week. He will be having a debate during this time show period. We're actually going to be from 10 to, I think, 11:30 in the morning, and there won't be any daylight savings time, standard time confusion. So you'll be able to tune into that show next week, April 13th, on Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's going to be Mike Rotkin versus Joe Williams. Joe and Mike are going to be talking primarily about the question of Sam Farr, who's our representative, 17th Congressional District Representative, and his involvement with the peace movement and the war, and the various complaints that have come up and commendations, pro and con, around that issue. So Mike has essentially defended Representative Farr and attacked as, quote, sectarian idiots, those who have suggested that Farr has should not be an invited speaker, or there should be plenty of invited speakers before him at, for example, the largest peace rally in Santa Cruz history, at least within memory, which happened, I guess, in mid-February, when Emily Riley tried to get Farr shoehorned into the speaker's area, but the Iraqi Peace Coalition and the other peace organizations said, nix, we didn't invite him. He has voted in favor of military appropriations, war in Colombia, has not come out clearly to stop the war here against Iraq, and we don't want him. He's not a peace activist. He's a politician who's pandering to some parts of the peace constituency. Now, Joe may feel differently now that Sam has voted in favor of one of the 12 courageous votes against the war appropriation, although, as I said, he still has not come out for the withdrawal of troops, and that's the obvious position. If you're illegally invading a country, you withdraw the troops, you seek some kind of international mediation or reparation, and you deal with that issue. That is not in any way a defense in any shape or form of the Saddam Hussein regime. It speaks to the issue of whether the U.S. government and we as U.S. citizens are going to sit on our butts while leaders wage aggressive war in our name with our money, sacrificing our lives, and then dragooning us into supporting it by raising the bloody shirt of the very deaths they have created. It is a really grotesque and vicious situation. It happens in a lot of wars. It happened in World War I, where you had a massive peace movement that got completely turned around because of the drumbeat of mindless, pseudo-false patriotism. Real patriotism is defending the interests of your country, defending your country from attack, not supporting a cabal of aggressive war criminals who have decided what they think policy should be in the Middle East so they can set up a private enterprise Iraq in the middle of a hostile Iraqi, a hostile Arabian situation, and indeed against the wishes of all the major powers, though unfortunately I see Russia and France seem to be beginning to cave to this shit because they want to be a part of the post-Iraqi loot-the-booty deal where Bush and his boys set up the military regime and hand out the economic goodies. And also, I also am sad to report that at least 2 days ago, the report from Al Jazeera website, which I get through a reflected website. That's the Arabian website that was recently expelled from Iraq, incidentally, by Saddam Hussein, but has also been expelled from Washington. Nobody likes them because they they present the unpleasant truths on both sides, or at least they present a side that the authorities don't like, reported that Syria and Iran have closed their borders at the request of the U.S. military so that, I guess, Iraqi irregulars or supporters of the Iraqi regime or people who want to defend their country whatever from whatever regime from the U.S. can't get back in. And I guess, you know, it's really hard for me. You know, it's hard to say, you know, you want to stand up and say, you want to say U.S. get out, but you want to say Saddam stay there? Certainly not. So it's really a difficult decision for a lot of us, but the reality has to be you don't support, particularly without a rising from the Iraqi people, particularly in a situation where it's clearly a manipulation by an existing, by the Republican administration in Washington. You don't support the bogus claim that they're there to defend Iraqi liberties or to stop threats to the peace when they do not exist and when disarmament is actually happening. Here's a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, you don't believe that they're fighting for democracy?
I have my doubts.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting, the reports coming out of the Russian military intelligence, the report this morning.
Get the website for that, Steve, if you have it.
It keeps changing. Somebody sent it to me again, and I've sent it out on my Liberation News site, which can be found at RiseUp. But this morning, the report was talking about how the Baghdad Iraqi defenses are still intact, and how these false reports were put out by the U.S. military, probably because they wanted the stock exchange and so forth, the financiers wanted good news to keep the stock market up at the end of the week. But the Iraqi forces in Baghdad have suffered very few losses, and the situation is very different from what we're being told in the corporate media in terms of the defenses there. And this resistance of the Iraqis is going to be going on for a long time, it's looking like.
Yeah, I'm looking at your email right now. It's from Russian Military Intelligence Update, War in Iraq, April 6th. All the claims made by Aviation Commander of the Coalition General Michael Mosley about Iraqi Army as an organized structure consisting of large units no longer exist are contrary to fact and, according to analytics, probably connected with severe pressure on the military command by American financial groups, is what you're mentioning.
Right.
I've got no way of evaluating the accuracy of this source either, do you?
I do, and actually I've attached another article that's on there that goes into that fact, you know, different things that this source has revealed before the U.S. admitted to them later, some things 3 days later, sometimes, you know, a few hours later, this has been a very accurate source from what I can see.
This is Izvestia we're talking?
Yeah.
A strange new character who publishes materials on the war in Iraq under the name Ramzaj, pseudonym of the legendary Soviet intelligence officer Richard Sorg, has appeared on the net. What is quite amazing is how accurately he describes events occurring in the Persian Gulf. He's leaving world news agencies in the dust. It's not just a question of accurate predictions and prognostications. The conviction is growing that Ramzaj is passing along real intelligence information. According to Gazeta.ru, on March 19th, 24 hours before the start of ground operations in Iraq, on one of those specialized internet forums, two very intriguing messages appeared. Should I keep reading this? Would you mind hanging while I do this?
Sure.
One of them entitled, "An Element of U.S. Attack Plans Revealed," and the second, "GRU Reveals Elements of U.S. Attack Plans." They describe with geographic details the general concept of the American-British invasion of Iraq. In part, they pointed out that the attack on Basra would be diversionary, its objective to pin down Iraqi formations concentrated around the city, and that the main attack would be carried out via deep encirclement of Basra from the west via An Naziriya and El Arma, coming out in the region of Lake Hau es Sabakia, thus forming an outer frontline ring around Basra. It was stated that from El Arma, a portion of the force wall will develop attacks along the river Euphrates, exiting in the area of Lake Habaniya, followed by the seizure of the town of El Habaniya and the establishment of a front to the south of Baghdad with partial encirclement of the southwest. This very detailed information appeared on the forum 12 hours before the start of ground operations in Iraq. Yeah, I guess it cites more information and then claims that this was confirmed. Is that the deal?
Right, and it goes through some things that really aren't to me, you know, politically the most interesting aspects of what comes out through these reports. But, mm-hmm. You know, just verifying the fact that this looks like real intelligence information. And one thing that's coming out through this is these reports is higher numbers of casualties of U.S. troops than we're being told as well.
Mm-hmm. What reports do you have of casualties of U.S. troops?
Well, I haven't been adding them all up exactly. Last time I did add them up, it was well over 100 U.S. troops, but this was a few days ago, and around 30 British troops. Now, some of this fighting with the Baghdad airport, looks like at least 30 U.S. soldiers were killed with that.
And that's for getting the vacant Baghdad airport. That's what I find kind of amusing. All this hype about getting a vacant airport.
Right. So, you know, it's like we're being told hurrah, hurrah type stories of how good the U.S. troops are doing there. We're not being told the real casualty numbers. We're not, of course, being showed the pictures of the dead Iraqi civilians and children that you see in Al Jazeera and so forth. You know, in terms of the resistance, it's looking, I think, a lot like a situation where the population is going to continue resisting with a U.S. occupation and you know, a situation very much like Vietnam.
Well, do we really know the population is resisting, or is this Saddam's organization that's resisting?
Well, there seems to be partisans as well working and working with the with them. I don't know exactly, but it looks like at least the Iraqi forces are very strong still, and there is a very strong sentiment amongst the people with suicide bombings that have taken place, and you know, people who really are opposed to having their country occupied by a foreign power that's there to take their oil.
Again, do we have any evidence that this is independent people, or that is this a, you know, a government military operation? The word is that Hussein was giving bonuses to Palestinian suicide bomber families.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know exactly, but anybody who's going to blow themselves up for a cause isn't. I mean, I don't think they're going to do it just for something that their family's going to get. I mean, obviously, they believe strongly in what they're doing.
Well, they might also believe strongly in the regime that they're supporting, too. I mean, although I don't know that much about, I know the critical side of the Hussein regime, the Saddam Hussein regime, but, and I think you do, too. I take it you're not a Saddam Hussein supporter.
No, but I'm an Iraq supporter, mm-hmm. and I believe in Iraq's right to exist peacefully without being invaded by a foreign country, and that it's up to the Iraqi people to deal with Saddam Hussein. And
what about the argument that, and I'll play the devil's advocate here, in World War II, that the German people could not overthrow Hitler. Even the German generals could not overthrow Hitler, that it took a conquest by foreign armies to overthrow him.
Well, Hitler was invading foreign countries.
No, I understand that, and I know that is different, but what about the argument that even had he not been invading, suppose he sat on his butt and just killed Jews in his own country and socialists and trade unionists and gay people and mentally ill people and so forth.
Well, if he was just doing that in Germany, I would not oppose, you know, people moving in against that if he had the kind of Auschwitz-type concentration camp or something
too,
like that,
which
Saddam Hussein doesn't.
That's not my question. My question is there a way for internal opposition to develop given the kind of totalitarian control that Hitler had, and is an analogous situation in Iraq, where that there is such a tightly controlled society? As, for example, in Stalinist Russia, it took, 20, 30 years after the death of Stalin for there to be essentially, you know, any kind of, you know, rebellion. I'm wondering, is there a way for the Iraqi people to stand up and do what you suggest?
Well, the Kurdish areas have been controlled by Kurdish organizations and Kurdish, Kurdish partisans in part of Iraq, and there has been resistance. And then in terms of things like women's rights, women have much more rights, are much less repressed than any of the U.S. allies in the region, like Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, where women have no rights to go in public without an escort or work or drive a car or anything like that. women have all those rights
right,
in Iraq.
I acknowledge that, but again, I get back to the issue regarding the Kurds. Part of the Kurdish independence stems from the fact that they're in the no-fly zone, and the Iraqis have anyway excluded Kurds from some of the major cities and engaged in, you know, cleansing operations in the last decade. So, and I don't know, again, the issue, the question to me, and I think it's a very real one, which I'd like to see somebody on the left answer, is what are the real prospects for some kind of internal rebellion against the Iraqi regime? I mean, even with all the U.S. support for all these, you know, Iraqi opposition groups, and I guess recently the Shi'i Islam religious leader stood up and changed his position from saying resist the invaders to don't fight, period, on either side. And I don't know what that means quite, but I guess it means it's, you know, it says don't fight the Americans, don't fight the, you know, Hussein, don't fight anybody, I mean, is what he was saying, is what I understand it. But what are the chances of Iraqis being able to resist from inside, let's say, suppose there was no U.S. intervention?
Well, I think that in terms of the resistance now, the resistance is going to be against an occupation army. And, you know, that's, I mean, what the U.S. has in store for them is not going to be anything any better. I mean, the first thing the U.S. wants to do is privatize the oil. The oil's been used to benefit the people through social programs, and now it'll just go into the pockets of the multinational oil corporations, you know, and or the U.S.-based oil corporations mainly, and, you know, as it does in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, and not benefit the people at all. The problem, the main problem in terms of dealing with Saddam Hussein, I think that is going to be on the back burner for the Iraqi people for what their biggest problem is. Their biggest problem now is whoever the U.S. puts in power and the problems that's going to cause. And, you know, the U.S. supported Saddam Hussein, and the U.S. supports horrible people, so the people there are going to have to figure out how to get rid of them. The U.S. has supported some of the most fascistic governments in the world, like Pinochet in Chile, very fascistic systems that were difficult for people to struggle against. So people aren't going to be better off with something that the U.S. imposes there.
No, I don't disagree with you, but I think it's important to separate these arguments. I'm still looking for, you know, a response to the issue of is there any realistic chance of internal opposition developing in countries like Syria or Iraq or Saudi Arabia, where there, you know, other than, I'd say, a fundamentalist Islamic resistance, which is probably the most likely, I suppose that's populist. That's, you know, that's why, if that's the feeling of the population in Afghanistan, that's what you got. You got the Taliban, right?
Well, that was with billions of dollars of CIA backing.
Right, right. And, you know, in the fight against the Soviet occupation. But, you know, is there a realistic chance of opposition groups overthrowing these regimes without external foreign military intervention, regardless of whether you think military intervention is good or not? I'm just asking that question independently.
I think people can resist under any situation, and, you
in
know...
In theory, sure, but what about practically, realistically? How, I mean, are you suggesting that the people of Germany could have effectively resisted Hitler in the 30s and 40s without the U.S. and the Allies invading?
Well, actually, there was some effective resistance, not right inside of Germany, but take, for instance, Yugoslavia, which threw the Tito's resistance, the partisans that threw the Nazis out of there.
Right, well, that was an occupied country. I'm talking about in a country where the citizens themselves, because we were saying we want them to throw out their dictators, right?
Right. Well, it's happened. I was in Nicaragua in 1986, and that was just 7 years after a revolution had taken place against a horrible dictator, the Somoza dictatorship, that, you know, did horrendous things, dropping people from helicopters, all the men in one town, dropped them all from helicopters in front of their families, trying to get people to talk, things like that, which occurred under Somoza. The people were still able to rise up, and when they rose up, they took their country back very quickly.
Right, but the question is, in Iraq, could that happen?
I'm saying that the exact same thing could happen in a place like Iraq, but it's less likely with the U.S. attacking them, because people are rallying now, behind, you know, their right to exist without this intervention, without the starvation blockade, and without an occupation army.
Well, we know it didn't happen for 12 years, from 1991 through 2003, even though there was independent, you know, not independent, but semi-autonomous Kurdistan in the north, and, you know, hostile U.S. With its bombing and its sanctions.
Yeah, well, with Saddam Hussein and, you know, being under attack, as part of the whole country being under attack, I think that brings people more behind him than, you know, pushing people in a direction of overthrowing them.
That could be. Well, okay, I got you on that. Is there more you want to say or upcoming events? I know that you were a part of the delegation that went to Farr's office, and you were calling for a return to Farr's office on Wednesday, but now Representative Farr has voted against the military appropriation. Aren't you happy?
I am happy, but the Democrats and Republicans as a whole voted for this thing. $63 billion was passed. I think we did exert some meaningful pressure on Sam Farr, which this was a victory of the anti-war movement, that Sam Farr here locally at least represented us in not voting for that $63 billion for the war. But the Democrats and Republicans as a whole did vote for this. Only 12 voted against it, two Republicans, the one socialist, Sanders, in Congress, and then 9 Democrats. So I think it's a pretty sorry state of affairs that we have a whole united government that's behind this insane war that's going to drag on for a while, and it's going to cost a lot more money, too. Well,
are you going to be showing up at Farr's office at 3 o'clock on Wednesday to...
4 o'clock.
I think it's 3 o'clock. That's what we got on the flyer, as far as I've seen.
It is 3. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
3 o'clock. 3 o'clock on Wednesday. And, the flyer is out saying that we said we'd congratulate him and thank him for his vote and celebrate this as a victory of the anti-war movement, as part of demanding bring the troops home now and not a dime more for the war. And so Sam Farr really has not taken up any of those demands of bring the troops home now or except for saying some vague things about peace. And we do want him to be much clearer on that. So we're going to ask him to do that.
Well, he did. I actually posted on the Indie Media website an article from, actually a letter from Farr's office explaining his vote.
Uh-huh.
It's not very satisfying. You may have seen it on the website. That's, for those who are interested, it's www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. I can read it. Why don't I do that after we finish this conversation, and if you want, you can call back or comment on it.
Okay.
And anything more you want to suggest? I know that Monday there's a town hall meeting at 7 o'clock on the war. That's tomorrow. Are you going to be at that meeting?
Yes, I am.
Now, what about Tuesday when they sell out the permit parking in the afternoon sometime? I guess the session starts at 3, and they're going to do this, homeless vehicles be gone legislation, which also actually impacts residents, too.
Well, I'll be working at that time. I won't be able to come down and speak.
Well, that's part of the plan, Steve. We don't want your kind around there. That way.
All right.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
So, reading on the Indie Media website under the article, Farr's reasons for voting no, still no call to pull out troops, here's the article. Well, here's Farr's statement. Farr's statement from Sarah Rosen, his representative in Washington, or his contact. It reads as follows. It is never easy to make spending decisions in Congress, especially on something as critical as war. As legislators, we deal with competing interests every day, and often we are able to arrive at a decision that does the most good or at least the least harm. But tonight I am making the only decision that my conscience, could allow. Although this bill will be passed by an overwhelming majority, I plan to vote no on this supplemental. I have two major reasons for voting against this bill. First, because it leaves our first responders at home, our troops on the home front, without complete protection. And I think he's talking about fire services and such in the so-called war against terrorism. Second, continuing Farr's statement, because I do not believe this bill addresses another emergency, repairing U.S. relations with the international community and its representative organizations such as the United Nations and NATO. The war is the result of failed diplomacy. The war cost us valuable allies, and now it is costing our lives. It will also cost us, the American taxpayer, billions of dollars. In the last Persian Gulf War, we relied on our allies. The war cost the U.S. about $61 billion, but almost all of it was reimbursed. The amount of money in this one supplemental larger, is larger than the entire cost of the first Persian Gulf War, is the largest supplemental in history. At about $75 billion, it is larger than the entire budget of the state of California. The emergency this bill supposedly addresses is the security of the American people. And then he goes into the stuff about the war on terrorism, which I find kind of annoying, but let's hear it. First and foremost, American security begins at home. Our attention in Congress must therefore be focused on protecting the territory of the United States from attack. That is the apparent reason we intervene in Afghanistan and now Iraq and in other countries across the globe. This bill inadequately addresses the security needs of the United States. We are spending $62.5 billion for military activities in this bill and only $4.25 billion for homeland security. Our troops overseas should be secure in the knowledge that their loved ones here are safe from any form of domestic terrorism. I'm going to pause here and interrupt a little commentary. It's obviously clear to almost any fool in town that invading Iraq is more, not less, likely to increase terrorism. I don't think Farr mentions this anywhere in his statement. He is talking for more money against in this bogus war against terrorism, which essentially involves more repressive apparatus at home. And he also doesn't call for the withdrawal of troops, the cessation of the bombing, or a ceasefire. I think this is very important. He's using these strange, idiosyncratic pretexts to do a good vote. His pretexts are the first responders and the fact that it's hurting our alliances. I don't know much about his... I don't really think I necessarily... I haven't really investigated his first reasons. I think he tried... In essence, what it is it's he's concerned about an amendment by the Democrats which was defeated in the House Appropriations Committee. He's going to talk about that now. An amendment offered by Representative David Obey of Wisconsin, ranking Democrat on the Appropriations Committee, would have addressed the need for increased homeland security, but the Republican leadership did not allow the amendment to be debated on the floor of the House. So in other words, what Farr is saying here is to his fellow Democrats, don't call me a traitor for voting against the military here, because I'm really saying I support you Democrats in your amendment to give more money to the repressive so-called anti-terrorism apparatus, which to me is ill-advised and chicken shit, but I can understand it politically, because what he's saying is he's going against the vast majority of Democrats as well as against the Republicans, and so he wants to sort of give them an excuse for why he's doing this, or a reason. The bill also purportedly addresses the future of rebuilding Iraq. It provides just $2.4 billion for relief and reconstruction. This sum is woefully inadequate to meet the needs of the Iraqi people. We are in the process of bombing their country, destroying their infrastructure, and when the war is over, which I hope will be soon, we will ask them to rebuild in a new democracy. Again, nothing about stopping this bombing of the infrastructure, as, for example, Dennis Kucinich has forcefully called for in an April 2nd speech, Stop the War. This bill, Farr continues, provides more money for another airline bailout than it provides for the foundation of an Iraqi democracy. Moreover, the money for reconstruction in Iraq, which is supposed to cover a huge range of activities, including health, education, transportation, rule of law, agriculture, and more, comes with no apparent structure or oversight. The post-conflict reconstruction of Iraq can provide the U.S. an opportunity to rebuild its frayed alliances with the international community, an opportunity to work with the United Nations and NATO, and to strengthen their credibility, which was undermined by the unilateralist approach the administration has taken previously towards Iraq. This bill shows no vision of an international civilian administration in post-conflict Iraq, one that will be crucial to winning the peace. This task, as has been demonstrated in Afghanistan, could be far more difficult than mounting a successful war campaign. Now, again, this is the latest kind of hubbub I've heard from the chicken shit peace organizations in Washington, the ones who say, well, we don't want to demonstrate against the war anymore because we've lost that fight to stop the war. So now we're just trying to get the UN involved in the peace. I'm glad that people are trying to get the UN involved in the peace, but the war is not over. Every day it continues is a day we should be out there saying no to that war. And for people to say they've given up and they're now going to collude with these war criminals and try to lessen the effects of the occupation or speed the ultimate American withdrawal later on down the road is to me a fundamental betrayal and a confusion on what is going on there. Now, Farr is saying he hopes the troops will be gone. He is saying, you know, he's pointing out bad effects that the war is having. But he is not standing up and saying, stop this now, which is the clear principled position to take. And the problem is, if you don't take the principled position, then you get into the nose in the camel's tent problem, where, you know, you give a little here, you give a little there. It's like with the peace vigilers. They keep giving things to the Santa Cruz Police Department, and suddenly there's no more peace vigil. They've surrendered their entire constitutional right to be there. It's amazing. So you've got to have a clear point where you say that there's a line in the sand, if you will, to invert a Bushian metaphor, where you don't cross this line. You don't invade other countries unless they are seriously... Either they've invaded you, or they're, and this is the preemption doctrine, which I don't agree with, but the argument for preemption is they're about to invade you. They're about to go after you. So you have to strike preemptively. They're about to throw their nuclear weapons. So you have to throw yours first. This wasn't a preemptive invasion. This was a gratuitous, aggressive, imperialistic invasion, where the U.S. is setting up an empire in the Middle East run by an American general and American corporations, God's sake. Spare me the bullshit. Moving right along. Again, more from Representative Farr. My vote today is in no way a vote against American troops in the field. Their safety is foremost in my thoughts. I hope they will return quickly to safety of their homes. Hopes are fine, Farr, but you have the option as a representative to say, I want them home today. I'm not going to hope. I'm demanding that they come home today. I'm going to do what several other courageous representatives, like Kucinich, and I believe Lee, though I haven't read her speeches, have said. But no. My vote, rather, is a vote against the priorities of this administration and the Republican majority, priorities that place an offensive war abroad above defensive protection at home, priorities that place short-term, unilateral, quick fixes over international solutions that are sustainable in the long term. In other words, he's not talking about mass murder of aggressive war, which is what war is. Mass murder. Sometimes it's justified because they're invading your country. But mass murder, nonetheless, is what's going on. He isn't talking about that. He's talking about, these are the priorities. We have the priorities here and the priorities there. This is not a very conscience-laden statement. That it's not about that, that it's about some longer-term goal, some sort of more theoretical academic dispute. He does a disservice in putting it this way. Now you might say, well, this is how he really sees it. I wonder if that's how his constituents see it. That's the question. Because if his constituents don't see it that way, then what his responsibility is to say, I disagree with the 8,400 constituents who wrote me they want to get out now, or I want to end the war, to stop the war, and I have my own position, which is, I hope everybody gets out now, and I think it's kind of a bad war, and it certainly is hurting our alliances, but I'm not going to call for a ceasefire or the stopping of bombing, because, you know, that might alienate my Democratic friends who haven't even got the guts to vote against this military appropriation. Now, one of the reasons I say this is I've talked to the FAR staff several times, both in Washington and in Santa Cruz. I've talked to Rachel Dan, who you'll be able to see in full military dress, or whatever she wears, when she comes to the City Hall, Civic Auditorium, tomorrow, 7 o'clock in the evening. And these people, and I don't so much say this about Rachel, more I'm thinking of this woman, Rochelle, in Washington, and you can read my analysis on the Indie Media website, are pretty slimy. They really are. Their primary job is defending the ass of Representative Farr. And I suppose we should say, let's be realistic, that's what they're hired for, that's their job, what are you going to criticize them for doing their job? Come on, you know, get real. Yes, just like you criticize people who are defending Nixon or Bush or any of the other fucking liars and criminals who have dragged this country down to dishonor and resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people throughout the world and thousands of Americans. You know, all the time wrapping themselves in the flag of patriotism. So you bet. People who collude with this bullshit because it's their job, I don't have a lot of sympathy for them. Now, you know, I mean, it has to be said that some of these people will tell you privately, well, you know, I favor getting those damn troops out of there, but, you know, I got to, you know, and then, if they said that, if they had the courage to say that publicly, but they said, but my job is to tell you what Representative Farr says, and this is what he says, I'd have some more respect for these aides, but they don't do that. No. They sit around arguing with you. Well, Representative Farr has always opposed the war. Well, you know, it doesn't mean he's going to vote against the appropriation. Well, his military vote in October isn't the same thing as Fact of the matter is, we're in this war because enough people have not taken a position of conscience against it. Because that is the clear position. Anyway, I can go on. I hope you agree. Our question now is, what do we do to stop it? And I'm thinking, you know, I've floated the idea of a vigil at the IRS, and other people are floating other actions. We need to do something. We need to do as much as we can in our own way. I suggest demanding that the city council take an action, although they're a complete, you know, gang of losers as far as I can see, in terms of, you know, their own war against the poor, their own succumbing to a police department and staff priorities, their own unwillingness to step out in front. You know, they get big plaudits for it being the first city that came out against the Patriot Act or against the war. I'm not sure which. They were a year late, of course. They didn't come out against the sanctions and the war until much later. But the fact of the matter is, we need to do things like support a war resistor zone where people can say, I will not cooperate with this war. I will come to Santa Cruz. The city government will not cooperate with this war. We will find the corporations that are supporting this war. We will guarantee that we do not invest in them. We do not take services from them. We can do the kind of thing that was, we will boycott the companies that do this. We will boycott the institutions that are involved in this war and the military that's involved, and will not lend the police to arrest people who are coming to Santa Cruz as a sanctuary. And yeah, that's risky. Yeah, you risk federal funds. Yeah, you risk conflict with authorities. But that's what we need to do in order to stop this war, in order to stop this occupation. So this is on the net, this speech by Farr, and you can find it at www.santacruz.indymedia.org. And you can call in with your thoughts. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. It's 427-3772. Looks like we got a caller. Hi, you're on the air.
So, Robert, what does that say about our political process?
What
called democracy?
Democracy! Sorry, go ahead, caller.
Just, you know, you're saying that, that not too many people are coming out for the war, or against the war, I mean, anymore. Now that the war is on, they have to support the troops and get in line and shut the fuck up and support the troops. Otherwise, they're going to lose their ass in wherever their little democratic seat is. That basically says that our system is not working. I know there's a lot of people that are talking a lot about this Dennis Kucinich guy and how great he is. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, whoever steps in the White House are taken into a little room. And they draw the shades, and they show them a video of the Kennedy assassination you've never seen before. And then after that, they flip on the lights and they say, "Any questions?" Basically, that's what I think it is. It's the whole system, and I don't think we should be, you know, people say to go and vote. It's just not working. Well, no wonder nobody's voting anymore, you know. But on the other hand, you know, I don't know. It's just, if whoever steps into the White House are going to be fighting for the same thing that George Bush. I don't care if you're, you know, a Green or Democratic or whatever the fuck you are. You're still going to be going for the same policies because that's what they put you there for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people like Farr are flip-flopping on all this shit, you know. He did the same thing with the Kosovo War as well.
Well, I don't think the issue is who you're going to vote for a year and a half down the road. The question is, what are you going to do tomorrow or today?
Right. That's true.
And that is a difficult issue because a lot of people who came out by the tens and hundreds of thousands in the last few months to at least do a once every month, get the fuck out of there, don't get in there, are now feeling, well, shit, it's already done. What do we do now? They're demoralized. They've been doing enough of these things. And there is no kind of vision for what to do next. You know, that's the problem, or at least I don't have a vision. I've, you know, got some ideas, but
I think people, like what you said, people need to figure out who's funding this war and who's doing things for this war. There's a lot of software companies that are doing things for this war. I just found out that Coors Beer is making armor for the tanks and it's a special kind of, some kind of a really strong plastic or something like that that they can wear as Kevlar and all that too. And maybe people should be starting to boycott things like that as well. I mean, simple things like that. people can do. It just takes a little bit of research on the computer, you know, Google it up and find out who's in charge of running this war. And, you know, Lockheed is here in Santa Cruz. People could be over there shutting that down, that kind of thing.
Do you have any updates on Lockheed for us?
I don't know much about them at all. All I know is there was a protest like many years ago there, I believe, a lot of folks, but there's been nothing there, nothing at all. And rather than marching down and shutting down San Francisco, which I think is important, especially around some of the places they've been doing it, like Bechtel and all that, I mean, those play a big part too, but I think people need to take it up a notch.
Well, that's one of the reasons I suggested this IRS thing, because we have the last week before taxes, you know, so it's a place where people can actually say, I ain't paying my taxes, and that's one thing. And the other thing is it's sitting right near the government building, so if people decided they wanted to do other more direct action, blocking this and blocking that and blocking roads and all that sort of thing, they could start there and go from there.
Yeah.
And they could get, you know, some kind of honk-honk, you know, there could be a honk-in or a bunch of honkies honking or whatever.
Honkies for...
Honkies for peace, man. Or honkies for out now. You know, but in fact, you know, we seem to be, you know, we don't know what to do next.
Well, it was interesting.
You
got to
tell us what to do, Bob.
I've been listening in and out of your show. I heard Macho Bob earlier. It was kind of interesting. He always seems to argue, likes to argue. I don't know.
And we
weird.
Had Steve Argue, who likes to Bob. No,
yeah. No, that's right. Anyway, no pun intended there. What I was going to mention is basically what came to my mind when he was blabbing about everything. And basically what Michael Moore said was he explained why he did what he did at the Academy Awards. He basically said that all the kids in Columbine now know that it's okay to kill someone that you don't like. So basically Bush and all his cronies and Rumsfeld and all those guys, that's what they're saying to these kids. That's what they're saying to the youth of America. It's okay to kill somebody that you don't like. Straight up, that's what it's all about. Anyway, I'll let you go so other people can call in.
Hank Skidmark, anything from the streets that you want to tell us about?
No, I haven't been on the streets. Been busy working. So, I don't know a heck of a lot.
Work harder. Pay higher rent.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Lines are open. Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 427-3772. If you're out of the area, it's 831-427-3772. Or you can email us. Although the system doesn't seem to be working on the computer at the moment, I'm having some problems, at rnorris@hotmail.com. Hi, you're on the air with Robert and Walt. Hello?
Hello, Robert.
Yes.
Hi, this is Louis.
Hey, Louis.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Been listening to your show here, and Bob just mentioned Lockheed Martin. There is an action planned at Lockheed Martin.
Tell us about it.
There is a weapons inspection team.
Uh-huh.
We'll be visiting Lockheed Martin on Friday, April 11th.
Mm-hmm.
The whole deal here is that there will first be a press conference on Friday, April 11th at 12 noon in front of the county courthouse at Ocean and Water. So 12 noon, county courthouse press conference. Come down, be part of that. At 12:45... people will be leaving to caravan up to the Lockheed site, which is in Bonnie Doone, and the weapons inspection will take place at the gate of Lockheed Martin. People who are involved, who want to play the role of a weapons inspector, will be provided with, or can provide themselves with, certain gear and garb.
Now, wait a minute. Are there going to be airstrikes before this happens to soften up Lockheed?
haven't heard about that.
How about an armored column to encircle the...
Well, you know, if you want more information on this,
yes.
These are all good ideas.
Yeah.
Yes, if you want, and then you could drop leaflets on the, you know...
Paper airplanes.
Sort of psychological operations that they do in various countries.
Mm-hmm.
If more information. So, people are welcome to participate in this. The planning is going on as we speak, and there's a group of people who are planning this action.
Mm-hmm.
More information, you can call 459-6887,
mm-hmm.
and that's a local number. It's an 831 number. And
that's 459-6887?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
There's an email, so if you want to contact people that way,
mm-hmm.
it's SCC... WIT. So that is Santa Cruz County Weapons Inspection Team.
Huh.
Okay, SCCWIT at riseup.net. And riseup is RISEUP.net. Iraq Action Network is, this is where this came from, but there was a small group of people who decided that they wanted to take on this particular project. So anyway, contact the Weapons Inspection Team organizers at those numbers, 459-6887, mm-hmm. or the email, which I just gave you, mm-hmm. and get involved. Yes, it's true that there has been no activity at Lockheed Martin for years,
mm-hmm.
and certainly it's true that there needs to be an action there.
Let me ask you something.
Sure.
A couple things. I know you're active in the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
And the Green Party has an assembly coming up fairly soon, or?
We meet on the, let's see, when are we meeting next? Oh, you put me on the spot here. I'm supposed to know what's going on.
I think it's the second Monday of every month. I'm also in the Green Party.
No, yes, you are. Second Monday of each month, 7 p.m. at Loudoun Nelson Center.
So that'll probably be on the 14th, I would guess. Huh?
Yes, that would be correct.
And that's 7 p.m. Now, you were with the group that that went to Farr's office. In fact, I saw you there.
Yes.
And you
guilty.
Know, what's that?
Guilty as charged.
You are, in fact, yes. You were in the known company of a very Steve Argue, who is a known questionable individual. He also called the show. I don't. Are you just part of a plan, the two of you, to subvert the? no, probably not. Yeah.
Yes.
So you've heard some of the show. You've heard that Farr did vote against the appropriation. I read an email of yours in response to Amy Courtney's email.
Right.
That said, you know, you're planning to show up again at Farr's office at 3 o'clock on Wednesday on April 9th?
That's the plan.
What about his the concern that he'd call for a ceasefire, stop the bombing, and withdraw the troops? You've heard me read his recent statement. What's your feeling about his position now?
Well, yes, he's taken a step. It's always baby steps with Sam Farr, you know. One small step, and that's what he's done here. Well, you know, I really want to give him credit. It was a courageous thing to do. He was in a very small minority, as you know, of people who voted against this, the war funding bill. And I'm sure he's taking a lot of heat in Washington for doing this. So, you know, he did the right thing, and it's great.
Yeah, but let me say something. You know, yeah, in Washington he's taking heat, but in fact, in terms of his district and the opinions of people here, although I don't think, what I heard from Rachel Dan was they haven't gotten many phone calls, and by the way, people can call Farr at 429-1976, 429-1976, and you can call him now and say, return the troops home immediately, cease fire, end the bombing. And she's claimed that she will tally these results. But as of a couple days ago, nobody had called in. But still, I think that his district generally favors supporting the troops by withdrawing them. I mean, what's your feeling on that, Louis?
No, I agree, certainly. Yes, as I was going to say, I'm sure he's taking a lot of heat in Washington. However, he is getting a lot of support from his constituents here in Santa Cruz County.
Mm-hmm. And Monterey.
And Monterey County for his positions. And I think he felt, like he would probably take a lot more heat from us if he didn't vote the way he did.
You bet.
So what I'm saying here, of course, is that it is our continued pressure that makes him do the right thing when he does so. The right thing in our eyes, of course.
Yeah. Well, what about there was?
I think people should call his office.
429-1976.
Early and often, as we say, as we tell people how to vote in Chicago, vote early and often,
yes.
And let them know, yes. So three things you should say to Sam Farr's phone answerer, who's probably going to be Rachel Dan. She typically picks up the phone. And thank her thank you, Sam, for your vote. That was a good vote, and thank you. Number two, call for an immediate withdrawal of immediate ceasefire, followed by a withdrawal of all U.S. troops from Iraq. So that's what I would encourage people to say to Sam Farr's people when they call the office.
And to tally your vote on that issue and to report back on it.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's something that neither they nor the city council I think, are in the habit of doing, and they should, because we are a democratic republic, right?
Exactly.
Now,
well, that's debatable.
A plutocratic republic.
Highly debatable.
One last thing, Louis, or actually, I mean, I can get a couple of the last things out of you. I don't
sure.
know. The group that met on Wednesday with Representative Farr's representative, Dan, Rachel Dan, also had planned to come back after the House Appropriations Committee vote on 9 o'clock the next morning. And I kind of, I'm wondering what has become of that plan. Is that going to happen as far as you know? Or?
Well, I don't know. That would have been Friday morning,
yeah, right.
actually. I did call Friday morning and spoke to Rachel and said to her what I just said to you.
Right.
I thanked Sam for his vote and then went further and said, now we need to ask Sam to call for a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
So, I didn't go, but I did call.
Right, and I mean, I kind of figured it was so late in the day that we only learned about it so that we would go on Monday if we wanted to go at all, and I'm kind of leaning to the idea of not going because we'll be going on Wednesday.
Right.
And also, many of us will be going on Monday night to the town hall meeting at the Civic Auditorium,
yes.
where the Iraqi war is the only issue on the agenda. Do you have any suggestions for the city council as to what to do or what people should come with to that particular meeting?
Well, I would ask the city council to pass a resolution, since they already have opposed the war, pre-war, then the next step is, if you're in opposition to this war, then you express the sense that you want the war to end immediately, and that would be an immediate ceasefire followed by a withdrawal of troops. So that's what I would want the people of Santa Cruz who attend this meeting to say to the city council. Also to say to Marty Wormhout, who will be present, and she will be representing, of course, the county of Santa Cruz as a supervisor. Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, you're still there. Okay.
Yeah.
I would suggest that people take those actions.
Well, you know,
There are probably many more things that they could say, and
a lot of people, I know Celia Scott was calling for the impeachment of Bush, I believe, last time. And
yeah, I'd want to reiterate that. Yes, certainly.
But what about some actions that the local government can actually do that would, say, assist people like Steve Funk, who, you know, turned themselves in, a Marine, saying he would not obey illegal orders, he would not kill Iraqis at the order of, as a Bush mercenary. I don't know, he used these exact words. And what about the idea of finding out and not cooperating with any kinds of purchases from companies that are benefiting from this war? I mean, doing something that would actually be real rather than one of these symbolic gestures, which, I know, I'm okay with the symbolic gestures, too, but I think we need some substance. I mean, they stripped the Patriot Act's opposition of real gestures, I mean, real actions. They made it simply a symbolic motion by the city council, and that has been a constant, illness that the city council seems to have.
Yeah. Well, yes, I know, I agree with you that substantive action should be taken.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be something along the lines of withdrawing investments from companies or from funds that support companies that support the war, you know, a la the apartheid resistance campaign back in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Santa Cruz participated in that. And many cities across the country, of course, did, and not just cities, but counties and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be done. Mm-hmm. You'd want to have some very specific recommendations, and I wouldn't know what those are particularly, but there's probably a company or two in Santa Cruz that is directly related to the war machine. Well, certainly in the county, there's Lockheed Martin, and we could say to Marty Wormhout, or we could organize. It takes organization. It always takes this, you know. You have to get people together. Be very clear about what the problem is, and then what the solution you see to the problem, and then you go to your elected officials and say, here's what we want. This is the solution we have come up with.
How did things? Were you up on the campus with the protest up there, the teach-in last week?
Last week,
I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, there was a teach-in on campus.
I haven't been up there for 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, and I wonder, how did Peace Friday go on Friday, since you're my man, you're my proxy at Peace Friday there.
Well, sometimes I do put on a fake beard.
Yeah.
So that I look, you know, people say, are you Robert Norton?
Yeah, there you go.
No, I'm not, but I'm his proxy.
He's not Robert Norton.
Um, The Peace Friday was fairly well attended this past Friday. We had probably, 50 people out there, on all scattered about the four corners. Women in Black had a large presence there this week, and I want to really acknowledge their presence. They have been regulars now for, I don't know how long, but 2 or 3 months, I think. They've been coming out pretty regularly,
mm-hmm.
and that's a strong statement that they make.
Anything happening with the Town Clock Peace Vigil stuff? Have you seen anybody down there?
No, I've not. I have not been, I'm not current with that at all, no.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are, I did speak with Matilda Rand yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and she is, that she's very concerned with that site. That was the site of the proposed Peace Park.
The Doug Rand Memorial Peace Park.
Right,
mm-hmm.
and so she was, of course, very active with that, and she is organizing cleanups down there to keep the place looking good. And
she cleaning up the homeless as well by making sure they don't roost around there?
No, I don't think that's her intent at all. No,
yeah.
it's to keep the place, the site, you know.
Right.
Clean.
No, I'm pleased with that. I know that the police moved in a Parks and Rec crew to clean up the site and had 8 police officers to quote protect them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well,
I know Matilda Rand and Sherry Connable and others were talking about maybe starting another peace vigil down there.
Uh-huh.
I think it's really important that we recognize that the human use of a site is more important than the presence of a monument there. The monument is only as valid as the spirit of the people that currently, you know, embody what that monument was supposed to symbolize.
Right, the collateral damage statue.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking with Louis LaFortune, the infamous Green Party peacenik, who is known for his being out there with a sign and all kinds of other things. Oh, finally, were you on the march on Saturday that went up to Lighthouse Field, or was there such a march?
I was. It was rather small. It grew out of our rally that we did last Saturday at the Town Clock, which we then moved down to Beach Flats Park, and we had a small rally there. Well, I don't know, small. 200 or 300 people, I think, showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then a number of us continued after the speeches were done, and we walked up to the lighthouse, carrying our signs. And the interaction with the boardwalk patrons was very interesting to us.
Tell me.
The people who come from San Jose and other places to go to the Santa Cruz boardwalk.
Very racially mixed group.
Well, there's that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, they don't tune into indie media or Democracy Now. Let me just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think their sole source of news is, you know, the Chronicle and Fox and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably blissfully unaware that there is a peace movement. And so I think it is it's important for us in the movement to make ourselves visible in places that people who don't think we exist are able to see us.
Mm-hmm.
So when we walked along the sidewalk on Beach Street, and by the way, you can only walk on the sidewalk because the boardwalk is private property, as we were reminded yesterday.
Actually, I walked along the boardwalk a week ago when you were doing that protest, giving out flyers.
Uh-huh.
And I was told that that was a violation of their property, and I said, no. You are open to the public, and this is First Amendment activity, and I will continue to do this. If you want to have me arrested, go for the gusto, and of course they backed off, because what I'm saying is true. If a piece of property is open to the public and they want to restrict First Amendment activity, they have to provide a place for that First Amendment activity, or else they are violating the Constitution, and you get a nice false arrest lawsuit. So just a word to the former, future peace marches in that area.
Oh, thank you for that, because we were challenged. We did have flyers, which we were distributing. And we were challenged by a uniformed employee of the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk,
mm-hmm.
Who told us that we could not distribute our flyers on her property,
mm-hmm.
Seaside property.
Yeah, I mean,
I was not really clear. I had an idea that it was permitted, but I wasn't really clear on it. But mm-hmm. So thank you for clearing that up.
Well, get a second opinion, but that's the basis on which I acted, and I was not further harassed. And they brought me a 6-page contract that said, here is your application for a permit, which you have to file 72 hours before.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at them and I said, Sorry.
No,
this
what,
is nice.
And what you might have done at that point is what Bob Downing did when he when the Foot Locker protest occurred at the Capitola Mall several months ago. Paul Ortiz and a number of labor activists organized a protest against Foot Locker because of their labor practices. And Foot Locker is a shoe store.
Mm-hmm.
And the they walked through the Capitola Mall with flyers and with signs affixed to their persons which said, "Ask me about Foot Locker," and they asked for a flyer. So they were putting it on the mall patrons to initiate the contact,
mm-hmm.
Which was a clever tactic, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
They were approached by a security guard of Capitola Mall, who walked up to them carrying a copy of the mall rules,
mm-hmm.
and then Bob, who's very quick-witted, said to them, "Oh, did you bring the Constitution? Is that the Constitution? I forgot to bring my copy. Thank you for bringing a copy of the Constitution, which guarantees our right to speech."
Mm-hmm.
And the guard was so flustered that he was speechless and realized that he had... Yes, I thought it was a very brilliant move on Bob's part.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, next time they walk up to you with some rules, you could ask, "Oh, thank you for bringing the Constitution, because I forgot mine."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, I guess what happened? Did they eventually force people to leave and stop flyering, or what happened with that particular...
They did. They did. They managed to move. They kept the whole thing moving. That was a tactic that they used. They didn't stop in one spot. They moved about, and eventually they were finally corralled by the security forces down there at the mall and were expelled.
How many people were involved in this protest?
You know, I don't know. I was out of town. I missed it.
Darn.
And so I think there were 20 or 30 people. I think it was pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways...
You know, maybe a protest that went from store to store in downtown Santa Cruz with a petition might be one way of kind of alerting the tourists to what's going on with, you know, drums and clowns and so forth. I mean, I know it's not, we don't have our own mall in the same way, but the Pacific Garden, you know, avenue is becoming more and more privatized,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they're removing the unsightly and the grubby and the, you know, the musically challenged and, you know, questionable peace activists with their tables for more than an hour and that sort of thing, which, by the way, they've used, as you probably know. In fact, I understand one of your relatives got a chalking ticket, which I find disgraceful. I don't know. How can you hold your head up?
Well, he's moved on to bigger and better things. He was also arrested in front of Bechtel in San Francisco during the days of protest there.
Oh, dear.
So, yes, he's quickly developing a record.
A bad seed. I can see that right now.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well,
the apple does not fall too far from the branch, you know.
Indeed.
As they say.
So if people want more information on any of this stuff that they might want phone numbers for, is there a number they can call? You've suggested that the Lockheed Action 459-6887 coming up on Friday, April 11th at noon, County Courthouse, is one thing to look at.
Yeah.
Are you going in for this IRS protest idea? Any thoughts on that one?
I think that's a good idea. I think that should be people... That's definitely an effective action. Yeah, I would support that.
Who's going to organize this? It could be you there, Louis.
Could be.
If anybody's interested in the IRS
sort
protest,
of have my hands full.
Yeah, if anybody wants to, yeah, most of us do is the problem, but if anybody thinks they want to, you know, cut an hour out of their weekend to help with this or to help organize it, give a call to 423-HUFF, and I will see if I can coordinate and get people together. But so far, haven't gotten a big response, although I think this is the week to do it because April 15th, of course, is tax day.
No, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Coming right up.
And it's right near Peace Friday, you know, so you can do some peace Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, as
mm-hmm.
well as Saturday and Sunday. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Well, we've been talking with Louis LaFortune, a notorious Green Party ne'er-do-well who helped elect George Bush, scoundrel that he is. We know that Mondale would never have done... No, it's not Mondale. What's his name?
What was his name?
The other guy. Gore.
Gore, yeah.
He would never have done such a thing. Boy, you never remember these people.
Gore, Invisible Al Gore. Well, he's just disappeared, hasn't
Gore,
he?
Gore, what a bore. I can't tell. It's, you know, so... But thank you for calling in, Louis. Is there anything you want to add?
Just to urge people to come to the town hall meeting tomorrow night, address their elected representatives at the city, county, and congressional level. So that's it's an important thing. And it's an important thing to make your statement to the public I feel like I'm more talking to the public at large than to these electeds.
Definitely.
When I speak, because it's always, you know, ultimately it's the public that mm-hmm. makes things happen.
I agree.
You know, as Sam Farr even himself said publicly, you know, we the politicians, we don't lead. It's the people who lead, and we follow.
As Chris Crown put it, when the people lead, the leaders will not run for re-election. No, he didn't say that. I'm sorry. And if you want to see Louis again, I guess he'll be showing up at 3 o'clock on Wednesday, April 11th. Is it the 11th?
No, April the 9th.
April the 9th. Thank you. Wednesday, April the 9th at Sam Farr's office, third floor of the county building, to commend and to at the same time encourage him in the most strong terms to get the hell out of Iraq and save our troops, support our troops.
Yeah. I think Stephen has in mind, Steve argue, is that we would meet in front of the building. Is that correct?
I think that's right. Is that what's on the flyer?
Have the flyer.
Maybe Steve can post that on the internet for us to be sure, but I guess we would meet in front of the county building, in front of the courthouse, probably in which, well, I guess we could...
I would guess the main entrance to the county building, because that's how you would get up to Farr's office.
So that's the five-story building at, let's say, 2:45 or around 3 o'clock on Wednesday. Come on down and make sure we get our damn troops out of there as soon as possible.
Yeah, bring a sign, you know, support the troops, bring them home, sort of message.
Mm-hmm.
Cease fire, stop the war now, sort of message.
Support our George Bush, send him home.
Send him.
Right.
Okay.
Hey, thank you, Louis.
Thank you, Robert.
All right.
Good day.
Bye-bye. It's still Free Radio Santa Cruz, and here's our next caller. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I'm Marta.
Hey, Marta.
And I was with Sam Farr from day one.
Okay.
Like a political activist here.
Uh-huh.
And all I can say is there's a quote, the last temptation is the greatest treason, to do the right thing for the wrong reasons. And I don't like his reasons why he finally came around. They have to be more aggressive than that. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
beyond that, I picked up a Voice, which is the newspaper of Cabrillo.
Mm-hmm.
On the second page, which I'm a former journalist, mm-hmm. right now I'm a senior, but what would be like a seven-column head, which you only give, you know, like maybe to George Bush to promote his views, was a whole editorial, two-thirds of the page, about why we should be in the war with Iraq.
Mm.
And whoever it was, I think it was she, used all the old reasons. Like, there was a, like Condoleezza Rice at one time before the war was saying, well, in what Saddam does, he kills people and he pulls out their tongues.
Uh-huh.
And what's interesting is before, let's see, the first Gulf War, you had George Bush with a Kuwaiti woman going around saying that she worked in the hospital.
The incubator baby hoax.
Yeah, that big hoax. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador.
Right. And also, Condoleezza Rice is called by Bush his warrior princess and his alter ego. But her counterpart from Daddy's representative to when they had a talk with Saddam, it shows in the video where she said, we have no treaties, you know, go ahead and go in.
Right.
But what I'm concerned
April Gillespie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm concerned about is the editorializing by someone at the Cabrillo Voice picking up all these old lies and promoting this war.
Mm-hmm. Have you been out at Cabrillo much? Because I haven't heard much from the Cabrillo.
No, I just picked it up yesterday, and I'm a former journalist. I have my own alternative newspaper in the Midwest against Dan Quayle and all those guys, but this is so right-wing. I mean, that's community college.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, you know, instead of losing the childhood center and maybe losing the stroke center, maybe we ought to lose the Voice. No kidding. We're going to lose the City on the Hill Press. They're trying to put the journalism department in the city. And that's such a good newspaper.
Mm.
But what do we do about the Voice?
Well, you know, I would like to see the students organizing and protesting like the San Francisco State students who took over their buildings, at least briefly, I guess, a couple weeks ago when the war started. And I don't know what's happening. I mean, I know that, you know, apparently UCSC students can't even muster enough energy to march downtown, which is a sad thing.
It is.
You know, I mean, it's a whole different climate than it was 12 years ago when, you know, thousands of people blocked the freeways. So it's really, you know, it's hard for me to understand what's going on, and I keep kind of working at these small projects, IRS, Maytable, Sam Farr's office.
Yeah.
You know, resolution of the city council on Monday to do much more than it's doing.
Yeah.
And also, mainly, my focus is on the war against the poor, because I think this war is also a war against the poor.
And the
ex-veterans, sure. And, I mean, I see this, unfortunately, some of the same peace activists who shout loudest against the war, or not loudest, but who are, you know, whose platform is based on that, like Kennedy and others, Resource Center for Nonviolence co-founder and vice mayor, are just fine with repressing local poor people. And that's the problem I have with that. So I don't know what to do next, but if you have any ideas as to how we can stop this war, let's hear them.
No, but that's an idea. Maybe I'll go back and take a course at Cabrillo and organize the students. I had organized the students for Bobby Kennedy in the Midwest, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
And we won there, even though a Kennedy never won in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
but we won there. In fact, I was with Bobby the night Martin Luther King was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And you can organize students. It was harder there in the Midwest. It was terrible. It was so threatening.
Maybe you should throw a couple of organizing classes for us. I mean, you know, I think that somebody's going and setting up a table at Cabrillo would be a good idea, though if you try and do that at UCSC, they'll have you arrested unless you have a student organization, and you can only do that in, I think, two locations on campus. One is the Baytree Convention Center, and the other is that one free, so-called free speech area behind McHenry Library. You have an amazingly repressive situation locally and at the university. So I think it's really important to recognize that as we proceed.
Well, maybe I can start with Cabrillo.
Yes.
I've been arrested before.
Please call me if you decide to go out to Cabrillo. You know, I'll try to be supportive. And.
Or just organize students against the war as a, quote, focal group.
Yes, yes. You could be a focal group. To hell with what Bush said.
I mean, a lot of us seniors, we get out there all the time with tables. We can put a table. I'm so upset about this editorial and the space that it was given.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son's an international correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say where.
Mm-hmm.
And was an editor, like, of the San Diego newspaper. But they fought for everything. They're even called the Red Commie Rag because they fought for everything.
Would you like to give a number where people can call if they want to help you with this project?
Not right now, because I have a lot of projects I'm working on.
Okay.
But this is where I would put my next...
Okay, well, if anybody's interested in this project, you can call Huff, 423-4833, and then if you call me on the Huff line,
yeah.
I will pass on that information to you.
Okay.
423-4833.
Okay, now, I tried to get an address for you in the telephone.
In the telephone.
This is free, in the telephone directory.
Oh, an address for Free Radio?
Yeah. Or
free Radio has a
secret
location. I called
it
location.
Freak Radio, huh?
Well, we can give you a post office box if that'll help you.
Yeah, because I'm going to send in, you know, $20 or something.
Oh, that'd be great.
Just along the way.
Okay, let me give it to you. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Post office box 7507.
Yeah.
Post office box 7507.
Okay. 95067.
95061. Santa Cruz, 95061. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for being there.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You are still tuned to the last 15 minutes of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. It's 15 to 1, all you people who've forgotten it's daylight savings time. Set your clocks ahead. Boy, I'm glad we have so many callers because, here's another one. The computer's down. I'm going to have to make do with all you callers. Hey there, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Robert.
Hey,
Steve here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be willing to go get arrested for free speech at UCSC. Are you saying they also intimidate people at Cabrillo too?
Well, that I don't know. I'm
okay.
Actually quite ignorant of that. I don't know what the story is with the Cabrillo regs or how harsh they are, or if any students are interested. In fact, if any Cabrillo students are listening, I encourage you to call the Huff line at 423 Huff, or call in to this show at 427-3772 in the next 15 minutes to let us know. But there, that's great, Steve. I appreciate that. I think we all appreciate that.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, I'm going to go do that, definitely. And I'd like to hook up with her and do that. So.
Okay, maybe she'll give. Maybe she'll call the Huff line, and I can put you in touch with her. Though it sounds like she's got a full plate there, but we'll see.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it should be organized one way or another because, you know, it's when they try to make it impossible to get out ideas, it's very important to stand up to that. I've been arrested for selling newspapers here, as you know, and I don't back down when the police try to tell me I can't do that. And sometimes usually the police do back down, and I was kind of surprised that time when they did arrest me and hold me for 4 days. But you know, that's part of embarrassing them too when they do arrest you for free speech. People believe in free speech, so
yeah, and people on the right and left believe in free speech.
Right.
Hey, well, okay, so give a call if you want to be a part of, you know, assist and support or be a part of Steve's proposal to reestablish democracy and free speech on either of these campuses.
Okay.
427-3772, thank you.
All right, bye. Bye-bye.
And actually, since we're going to be shortly off the air, you can still call in at that number, 427-3772, for the next 10 minutes or so. You can call off air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff meets every Wednesday at Baker Square Restaurant at 1107 Ocean Street, and you can actually run into Steve there directly, and we'll probably be talking about this possibility of organizing something on one of the campuses. There are lots of things in the Huff hopper. Asha, the woman whose two children were taken by CPS, homeless woman who lives in her vehicle and now starting a downtown business, was able, as I understand it, from a phone message from her to get her children back. But she still faces felony neglect and or felony endangerment charges because police found her children one block from the laundromat at Loudoun Nelson Park where she was, and they felt that she was being a neglectful mother, or so they said. That's coming up in mid-April. There's also the case of Jason Pascal, and I'm going to play you a tape from Jason, but this was before he was arrested most recently. This is an African-American guy who's on Pacific Avenue. You may have seen him downtown reading spiritual kind of tarot card reading stuff. I'm about to play this. I'll let this caller in, but then I'm going to play this. Hi, caller. You're on the air. Hello. Okay. Well, yeah, you can, Walt.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you, everyone who participated in the peace vigil. I think that people who are oriented around peace are really looked down upon in our society and really pressured to reject this cause, and I just want to say that for everybody out there who is resisting this oppressive war and resisting repressive policies everywhere, that you're really special, and take care of yourselves.
Thank you, Walt. And you put your body where your mouth was on numerous occasions at the peace vigil. Here we go with this tape from Jason Pascal interview.